Okay, we still need a little bit of more light, so let's widen that up. Good. Now, I don't know why it's fluctuating all the time. Okay, something is unsafe in this building. Let's see how far we can make it with this. Good. So what's going to be my motivation? My motivation to be working in this field for about 20 years now largely comes from standard model physics. Okay, we all know standard model describes three of the four fundamental interactions, very successfully so in the framework of ordinary, straightforward local quantum field theory. But two open challenges spring to mind. Firstly, we do know the theory isn't complete, and some of the riddles have been highlighted by Francesco already. Okay. And secondly, most strikingly, gravity is obviously not in it. So we need to find a way of making these things combine sooner or later, and ideally in a framework which does speak quantum field theory. So what then is asymptotic safety? Now, Wilson, back in 71, when he explained to us what is the meaning of a path integral, also explained to us that a fundamental quantum field theory defined by a proper quantum field path integral needs to possess some type of ultraviolet fixed point. Okay? Now, when he was saying that, neither the standard model nor even QCD were known, and he himself speculated that perhaps this crazy nuclear force could have been an interaction which corresponds to an interacting UV fixed point. Now, it took only 2 years for some other gentlemen to figure out that actually the converse is true. So the strong nuclear force seems to be one of those interactions which are described by a free ultraviolet fixed point. Now, what then is asymptotic safety? Asymptotic safety is the conjecture that there exist quantum field theories which are perfectly well defined in the path integral sense, which, however, do not asymptote to free high energy limits. Okay? Now, the name, of course, is mostly associated to Weinberg, who conjectured this type of idea in the context of gravity. But now in the field, more widely, this conjecture is being used to genuinely describe quantum field theories which do have interacting UV fixed points. Good. Now, maybe... yes, if there are crazy comments, I have a tool. Yes. Okay, so just a few plots. Exactly. Now, this is the way questions are being answered in Canada, I heard. Okay, so I adapt to the local customs. Now, think of asymptotic freedom. I plotted for you the well-known beta functions just to remind you of something you've seen already, which you understand inside out. Beta function is negative. Therefore, with the energy growth of the coupling means the coupling is decreasing with energy up until it would, if this prediction is correct, at asymptotically high energies, reach the free high energy fixed point. Good. But regrettably, not all interactions in nature have that feature. And in particular, QED or even the gravitational force have positive beta function at small coupling. So what does that mean? It means couplings want to grow with energy. Okay. And if we can trust these beta functions, this will tell us that the QED beta function, the QT coupling, will run into a Landau pole, very bad, because then predictivity falls apart. Or as in gravity, where it would show a linear growth, okay, it would become so strong that perturbative renormalizability goes straight out of the window. So the conjecture is this. Conjecture is that quantum fluctuations of certain type of quantum field theories could combine themselves to make, to generate a new zero for the beta function. And if this were to be happening, okay, if this were to be happening, then this new fixed point would be a high energy fixed point. It would be interacting, and it could be used to define a continuum high energy limit where predictivity is maintained up to highest energies. Thanks, Francesco. Now the slides are chilling out a bit as well, okay, which is good. And I can catch up where we stopped, okay? So the point I was about to make is, what is so special with asymptotic safety? The special thing is that some non-trivial type of cancellations are happening. So finding these cancellations then, or even raising the question, are these cancellations actually happening, okay, is an extra type of challenge, right? You have to look out for a mechanism, something which may or may not make that happening. Good. Now, let's see as to, thank you very much. For now it works, but I keep that as a reserve, thank you. So, a microhistory of what is known about this type of idea in high energy physics. Okay, so as I said, the idea came up in practical terms in the late 70s, and people have applied it for quantum gravity in 2 plus epsilon dimensions first, with some important first results, okay, which was nurturing the hope that, in fact, four-dimensional quantum gravity could be described by exactly this type of asymptotically safe UV fixed point. Now, a bit later down the road, two interesting further steps have been made, steps which happened in integer dimensionality. So the first one was a large N investigation of the Gross-Neveu model in three dimensions, which, as you may know, is perturbatively non-renormalizable. But then again, it was discovered that this theory develops a totally well-defined interacting UV fixed point. So it's a fundamental theory after all, yes, despite of what we would have thought according to ordinary perturbation theory. Now, in a similar tech, okay, these gentlemen investigated large NF U1 and then later QCD, okay, and also at infinite NF found an interacting UV fixed point. There's quite some difference between those two models. One of them is more weakly coupled, the other one is more strongly coupled, but broadly speaking, these were first shots at getting this idea to work in integer dimensions. Now, of course, the work of Weinberg, then after quite some gap, triggered, starting in 96, an important set of investigations in quantum gravity. And the main new idea which was brought into the game is technology, yes, based on Wilson's renormalization group. So these ideas have by now been very successfully applied to quantum gravity. We still do not have a proof of existence for asymptotic safety, but we have abundant circumstantial evidence for asymptotic safety, both in purely gravitational settings as well as in settings including metafields. You will hear more from that, I think, by at least Manuel and some others later this week.
So by quantum gravity in this case, do you mean still Einstein theory or something else?
I mean more general. So it's good. The question here is, what is the input, what is the output? So the input is diffeomorphism invariance and taking the metric field as the fundamental degree of freedom. The output is identifying what the fundamental action must look like so that the theory, in fact, can carry a fixed point, okay? So in general, this means that there may exist higher derivative or higher curvature invariance in the theory, so generalizing Einstein gravity in the quantum gravity domain. Okay, so only, yes, you can do that in this investigation even in an approximation, which is Einstein-Hilbert, but then you do also see that fixed point, okay? But from this philosophy, yes, these fluctuations will switch on higher higher order invariance.
Well, I mean, that raises the following question. If you do need the higher curvature terms in order to achieve this, now higher curvature terms, their meaning is really an approximation for low energy physics, not for high energy physics. Because if there is really an underlying finite theory of quantum gravity, let's say string theory, any other variant of what is being called quantum gravity, as opposed to just Einstein theory, then as you approach the singularities of gravity, when gravity becomes strong, as you approach that, those higher curvature terms are not going to be the description, the correct description of the physics, but rather all singularities are going to become softer and it will not be dominated. Those higher curvature terms will not really play a role in trying to understand the theory of gravity.
Yeah.
So if you do need those, well, it's fine if you are applying it to low energy physics, but I don't believe it will be correct to take them as a description of high energy physics.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for your observations. I'm very happy to discuss those in quite some detail with you, maybe afterwards, okay? Because there's an extensive stream of thought underneath this, and I have a couple of comments to what you say, but it will bring us a little bit of field of what I wanted to explain today, so I would suggest to keep that maybe for the discussion afterwards, okay? But I'm very happy to reply to each of your comment, okay? I just wanted to really highlight here that there is a substantial activity going on and that there is technical know-how available now to precisely address these highly non-trivial quantum field theories. Now, what I would like to focus more extensively on for the rest of my talk are quantum field theories without gravity. Four-dimensional quantum field theories, most general four-dimensional quantum field theories, so typically gauge theories coupled to matter. Okay? A few years back, it had been discovered that these theories, in fact, can become asymptotically safe, and I will develop for you a complete understanding of necessary and sufficient conditions for this to happen. So let me give you the basics of this idea. So I keep gravity out, and I do that because I want to focus on quantum field theories, which for now are weakly coupled. And the reason for why I want to do that is I want to have strict control over each and every step in order to be able to achieve strictly hard, solid, lasting results. So a corner in quantum field theories, right, which is a solid anchor, and which we may use later on to possibly construct quantum field theories, perhaps beyond the standard problem. Good. So let's see how that goes. Okay, so to give you an idea, let me start with the simplest quantum field theory, maybe, which may carry an interacting fixed point, which would be some gauge theory with gauge coupling alpha, so g squared over 4 pi squared, and its beta function up to 2 loop, right? Minus b being the one loop coefficient and c the two loop coefficient. So my mindset is that I'm assuming weak coupling. And so for this beta function to develop a fixed point at weak coupling, it would be sitting at b over c at this coordinate. But for this to be reliably within perturbation theory, I need this to be a sufficiently small number. Or in other words, I have to find a way to make the one loop coefficient small, which, as you all know, we can do in non-abelian gauge theories. So that will be my mind setting for now. Now the physics. The physics of getting a fixed point, ultimately, is the physics of some competition. It's a competition between fluctuations of gauge fields and fluctuations of metafields. And that you can very easily see by just looking into the one and two loop coefficient. Many of you have seen those. We can see that the gauge fields contribute positively to the one loop, but negatively to the two loop coefficient. So if we only have gauge fields, B is positive, C is negative, but then this ratio is a negative number, no physical fixed point, alpha being the square of a coupling constant. If matter dominates, meta-contributions to the one loop are negative, meta-contribution to the two loop are positive, so when they dominate, B over C again would be a negative number, we wouldn't have a fixed point. So in order to get a fixed point in the first place, we need a fine balance of these quantum fluctuations. We have to watch out for a sweet spot. So to see the sweet spot, let me rewrite the two-loop coefficient in a slightly different way and express it in terms of fermionic contributions, scalar contributions, and a term which is now proportional to the one-loop coefficient. Okay? So given my mindset, I'm assuming that B is some small number. If B is positive, the theories are asymptotically free. If B is negative, who knows what happens? So let's see what we get. If B is positive but small, okay, we see that the fermion contribution, which is always positive, and it's not small, it's order unity. So we automatically know that if B is small enough, C is going to be a positive number. So we do know, without any further ado, that these theories can have a fixed point when B and C are both positive. That's, of course, a fixed point which many of you know. It's the famous Kes-Wilbeng-Sachs fixed point, okay, which necessarily, for these reasons, must exist in any non-abelian gauge theory with a sufficient amount of fermionic or possibly scalar matter.
Don't you worry about applicability of perturbation theory in this case? So namely, the lowest order, which is alpha squared, is the lead, supposed to be the leading term when you are doing perturbation theory. But if you add to that the higher order perturbation theory to kill it, so are you really legitimate in doing perturbation theory?
That's exactly the whole point, and maybe I should have highlighted this more clearly. Okay, but this goes back to precisely ideas of Wilson, who proved, who showed us how to do it in the example of scalar phi to the fourth series. Okay, but let's use this for our theory. We have a beta function where the first coefficient is b alpha squared, but we know that b can be made parametrically small.
I understand b being small.
Okay, and so because then, if the next term is order unity, which as we just saw, it is, then we know B over C is small. So therefore, for that reason, this term has exactly the same magnitude as this term. And they have every right to cancel in perturbation theory. That's exactly... Let me please finish. This is exactly the domain of validity for perturbation theory. Moreover, I can then compute the fixed point even beyond the perturbative loop expansion. What I will find is that this guy is some power series with some numbers, ci, well, perhaps not c, lambda I, b to the power I. So it's a power series in this small parameter. So the three loop coefficient is not modifying the leading order term. It's giving you systematic small order corrections. So perturbativity means the fixed point exists at each and every order in perturbation theory and has this systematic type of expansion underneath. Good. So we know that we can do that in non-abelian gauge theories because we can generate a small b, okay? And so therefore that's the only, that's even better. That's the only domain, in some sense, where we really have strict perturbative control. Yes?
So what are you worried about? Well, I mean, adding higher order perturbative terms, when the very first term is not really dominating the overall value. So therefore, I worry whether the approach of using perturbation theory is a correct approach. If you find
the proof is on the blackboard.
Well, I don't see the proof.
The proof is
to what I'm asking, I don't see the proof. Suppose B is zero. Then I believe the alpha cube term. When B is
zero. No, but if B is zero is a special case because then you do not see any fixed point before you would have to go to three loop before you can make an evaluation of that question.
If you have some non-perturbative argument that there is a fixed point, then fine, then I will be able to trust this kind of argument. But otherwise, it's the method that I'm arguing about, whether a method like that can be trusted.
That's all fine. I'm happy with that. Okay. I mean, it's I'm repeating the line of argument, which which is the best argument we have in a theory where the radius of convergence is strictly zero. Okay, so I do not have to have any other method showing me the existence of a fixed point.
So if I consider rather than just the fixed point, the infrared bent fixed point. When I have an infrared fixed point rather than an ultraviolet, so the argument is the same in terms of cancellation between the first term and the second term. That's what we are talking about, the infrared bent sucks. So for that, I actually can also provide an unperturbability result for some Badoodle lattice and I find a fixed point.
So actually I can go beyond what you were saying.
I mean, there are two things. One, I can demonstrate that the finding number of flavors and colors, which is in the inside, is
so you are saying there is an upper
level.
Oh yeah, I mean, I buy that.
The other non-perturbative corrections that can come are to one kind from instant terms. And instant terms are also suppressed here exponentially because they will go like e to the minus 1 over alpha. But alpha is now the fixed point. Now alpha is a small number. So they are exponentially suppressed. So potential non-perturbative corrections to the beta function, which are instant terms, are also exponentially suppressed. So we can prove a number of things. But this is as it
were. Okay, I think we're going to have to move on in the interests of time, but we will have a discussion session where we can.
Well, so apparently we are having the discussion session now, which is fine with me as long as.
Now, but there's a schedule for next year that Brenner wants us to keep.
Yes, so. Good. So my point still is that you do not need external additional information to identify a weakly interacting fixed point. Okay. Good. Having said that, okay, this is how we identify it in this case. That's the simple one. Now we unidentify the other one. So let's look into the setting where B is negative. When B is negative, we've lost asymptotic freedom. And the question is, do we have possibly an interacting UV fixed point now? Okay. So for this, we need C to be a negative number. Now let's look into this expression. The fermions also contribute positively. Nightmare. You don't want to have them. B is negative, so this term is also a positive number. Very bad. So how can C ever become negative? Well, look into the scalars. If you have charged scalars, and if you would find a quantum field theory such that the quadratic Casimir of these scalars is smaller than 1 over 11 than the quadratic Casimir in the adjoint, then that term would be negative, and there is the chance of turning C into a negative number, in which case this could possibly become a meaningful ultraviolet fixed point. Good. So when we looked into that with my students, I thought, well, that looks like an interesting problem in Lie algebra stuff. So I sent him over to the library to check this 2 meters of Lie algebra books, which we have, and asked him to we can come back with the result, pick it up, okay. But regrettably, we didn't find it. And for some reason, this type of question, we couldn't find it in the literature that people have asked it. So we had to look through all simple Lie algebras ourselves to find an answer to that. Now the answer is this. If you look, okay, we know that the quadratic Casimir can be normalized, so I normalize it to the adjoint. And so we looked into all semi-simple and all exceptional Lie algebras and computed this ratio, the smallest quadratic Casimir in units of the quadratic Casimir in the adjoint. It turns out there is a lower bound, which is 3 over 8. Now, asymptotic safety would require this to be below 1 over 11. So there is a substantial miss, meaning there does not exist a simple, a unique, there doesn't exist any quantum field theory where the Banks-Zaks fixed point is a weakly coupled ultraviolet fixed point. Impossible. Proof. Okay? It's not possible. So, first part of results, what we've just discovered by this analysis and its natural generalizations to semi-simple gauge theories is, as long as there are no Yukawa couplings hanging about, okay, so in a model we've just described, if we only have simple or abelian, semi-simple, with or with abelian factors, gauge theories, yes, and fermionic or scalar matter in whatever type of representations, it's impossible for these theories to become asymptotically safe at weak coupling. Full stop. Very simple. Now, let's see whether introducing more couplings can help us. So first thing to do is throw in more gauge couplings. But what you then find is this is not going to help you because gauge field fluctuations from other gauge sectors come in with the same sign. Okay, so it's not helping. Can scalar self-interactions help you? Regrettably, no. Scalar self-interactions have too many legs. Because they have so many legs, they contribute in the loop expansion very lately. If they are charged, they come in at three loop. Okay, so if these terms are meant to turn over the sign which is wrong at two loop, we need non-perturbatively large scalar coupling. Okay? This may happen in some non-perturbative setting. I don't know that, but it's certainly not happening in perturbation theory. So no. So the only thing which in fact can contribute a two-loop and can flip the sign, in fact, are Yukawa interactions. So let's have a look at that. What's the main point with Yukawas? The main point with Yukawas is they come in at two-loop and they will always bring this minus sign along. Okay? That's in their DNA. Yukawas want to slow down the growth of gauge couplings. So if this term is positive and that term is positive, right, this term is going to be negative always, and there is potential for this term to overturn them and possibly generate a fixed point. But of course, since you've introduced another coupling, you would have to look into the beta function for that coupling as well, which is written here. So you would now have to watch out for simultaneous zeros of two beta functions. Now, if you do that, the answer is very simple. This is what you find. You do see that if the shifted two-loop coefficient, which I call C prime instead of C, which is shifted due to the fact that we now have Yukawa couplings, which also can sit on a fixed point, if this shifted coefficient becomes negative, and B itself is negative, so the theory no longer asymptotically free, then the model can have an asymptotically safe UV fixed point. Okay? So we are left with the following features. We now know that the following three things can happen in a generic quantum gauge theory coupled to matter. The theory can have a Gaussian fixed point. The Gaussian fixed point is either UV or IR, depending on the sign of the one loop coefficient. The theory can have a Banks-Zaks fixed point, but that can only be an infrared fixed point, nothing else. Or the theory can have gauge-Yukawa fixed points, where both gauge and Yukawa couplings have a fixed point. This can be either a UV or an IR fixed point. In all of this, obviously, gauge fields are mandatory. Okay? So,
can I ask about the Banks-Zaks fixed point in n equals 1 supersymmetry?
I come to supersymmetry.
Oh, okay.
Okay? So I add this little bit on my table. Okay, so I now know that whenever I allow Yukawa couplings, then in principle, I have now conditions which can be satisfied such that these theories will develop weakly interacting ultraviolet fixed points. So I've given you the lay of the land in perturbation theory, okay, and I've shown you very explicitly what is the mechanism and why. Now, there are a lot of papers which have been written by now which prove in very worked out explicit examples that this mechanism is actually operating. Okay, so we know it's operating. So with Francesco, we showed this, starting off with simple gauge theory. Okay, yes. Then subsequently, we've investigated the conformal window for these quantum field theories. Yes, we looked into semi-simple SUN cross SUM gauge theories, where a similar proof has been made available. Plus, we investigated supersymmetric gauge theories, proving that weakly coupled asymptotic safety is available as well. These things persist to higher order interactions, which I've investigated with my student Tuba. And okay, some standard model extensions have been put forward, but some of you will also say something about that. Now, the last comment I want to make is, you might wonder how important the gauge fields were in this. Okay, I was stressing that in all those fixed points we had gauge fields, but the question is, can we drop those? Could we find weakly interacting fixed points just with the scalars and the fermions, okay? So some scalar Yukawa fixed point. Now, amazingly, the answer is no. And it's in an intriguing way that this answer comes about. Now, if you remember what Francesco reviewed about asymptotic freedom, okay, we do know that when non-abelian gauge fields are around, then under certain conditions, asymptotic freedom is available to such quantum field theories. And conversely, if no non-abelian gauge fields are around, no asymptotic freedom is available. But what now turns out to also be true is the following statement. If non-abelian gauge fields are around, then weakly coupled asymptotic safety is available. If no non-abelian gauge fields are around, asymptotic safety is strictly, weakly asymptotic safety is strictly unavailable. So in other words, asymptotic freedom and asymptotic safety are exactly two sides of one and the same medal linked to the presence of non-abelian gauge fields in this case. Good. So now we know that the table I showed you a minute ago is actually all there is. There are no further options to get a weakly interacting UV fix.
Daniel, you're at 10-minute mark.
Yep, thank you.
If there's an abelian gauge field, does it forbid asymptotic safety?
No, it doesn't, but it doesn't allow asymptotic safety at weak coupling.
Okay.
Regrettably. Good. So, summary, okay? What we've learned at weak coupling, we can find UV complete theories, they can be free or safe, they do require non-abelian gauge fields. Now we do know, therefore, that any universality class of a four-dimensional critical point must contain gauge fields for that reason. Okay? Now, there's now an interesting link with conformal field theory and insights which have gained and that have been gained in that field using A-theorem and other technologies. Okay, so these gentlemen have established the following result, namely that any quantum field theory which is under perturbative control, both in the UV and the IR, or in the IR, okay, is going to asymptote to a conformal field theory in that limit. Now, I have just shown you an entire family of such theories, namely any weakly coupled four-dimensional quantum field theory, right, which has a weakly coupled fixed point, falls into this category. So we do know that any weakly coupled four-dimensional conformal field theory must contain gauge degrees of freedom in one form or another. It's not possible to do it without. Good. So after this general discussion, let me now use the last 8 minutes to say a few words about supersymmetry. Okay, now supersymmetry, of course, in particle phenomenology is a very important symmetry principle. Okay, it's very profound and it has inspired a lot of phenomenology. And one might wonder whether the principle of asymptotic safety is or isn't compatible with the principle of local supersymmetry. Now, what is different in supersymmetry? So firstly, you can write down theories with gauge couplings, you can write down some superpotentials, meaning Yukawa couplings, but then quartics are no longer independent. So quartics do not arise as independent couplings, they will be determined by these guys. The other nice thing with supersymmetry is that there are very powerful non-renormalization theorems. There's the superconformal R symmetry, for example, which can help some of these things. Good. So let's see what's going to happen with supersymmetry. I have a couple of plots to illustrate. So let's start with n equals zero supersymmetry, which in fact is no supersymmetry, and which is what we were talking about the last 25 minutes. Okay, so what we have discovered, so the table I've shown you a minute ago would correspond to the following four different types of patterns. Okay, so what you see on these axes is the gauge versus some Yukawa couplings. Okay, yes, so here this would correspond to a quantum field theory which has an asymptotically free UV fixed point. Their trajectory is running out to the infrared, so the red area are the asymptotically free trajectories coming out of the fixed point. Okay, yes, so this is a plot very similar to what Francesco discussed half an hour ago. And there's a region, okay, of trajectories which do not link to the Gaussian fixed point. Fine. But then there are some other quantum field theories which develop suddenly a Banks-Sachs fixed point, so the phase diagram would look like this. Okay. We still have an asymptotically free UV fixed point. Or you can even have a Banks-Sachs and a gauge Yukawa fixed point. Then this would be the phase diagram of flow trajectory. Okay? Now, in settings in which you have lost asymptotic freedom, only one scenario arises, which is D. Okay? Only the gauge Yukawa fixed point can arise, and this would then be the UV fixed point with trajectories running out to strong coupling or trajectories running out to weak coupling at low energies. Let's now switch on supersymmetry. So this is a simple gauge theory, so we talk about a simple U1 supersymmetric gauge theory. And what happens is this. Suddenly, this beautiful example of asymptotic safety is no longer available. Okay, supersymmetry switches off this channel. Yes, this, and the reason can very clearly trace back to exactly supersymmetry. So supersymmetry is forbidding the mechanism I just advertised. Okay. Now you can say, fine, okay, that's maybe how it is. Now what happens if we throw more supersymmetry into the game, like n equal 2? If we make n equal 2, even the Banks-Sachs and the Banks-Sachs and gauge Yukawa scenarios disappear. They are no longer available. End of story. Okay? Symmetry forbids these fixed points. The only fixed point which can exist is a UV safe Gaussian, or the converse of that, right? A theory which has too many fermion flavors, then it would be an infrared attractive, so a non-asymptotically free theory. And finally, if you do n equal 4, strictly speaking, even that scenario goes out of the window because n equal 4 means every value of the gauge coupling is a fixed point. You have a line of fixed points. Nothing is running unless, of course, now you switch on masks. Good. So in principle, we could stop here. No.
It's when you talk about supersymmetry, do you talk also about the scale in which supersymmetry is going to break? Is that important?
No, it's not important here, but I can comment on that in 2 minutes maybe. Okay. Good. So in principle, I could stop here and you could say, oh, finally has finished that guy. But regrettably, I was claiming that we do have an example with supersymmetry, so just that I explained to you that it isn't working. So what's the difference now? The difference is for asymptotic safety to work with supersymmetry, we need a semi-simple gauge group. It does not work with simple gauge factors. You need at least two gauge factors, but then it works. And let me show you how, because that's interesting. So think of a general SUN1 cross SUN2 gauge theory with some superpotential. So how to think about that? You have some superfield which is charged under one gauge group, another superfield which is charged under the other gauge group, and one which is charged under both of them, so they are talking to each other. We have left-handed and right-handed versions, not to run into trouble with anomalies. Okay, and so then we have a number of parameters in this theory. So all our fields, we have certain field multiplicities. So the only thing maybe for you to watch out is R, which is the ratio of N2 over N1, the number of gluon colors, and epsilon, which is going to be a small parameter in the Veneziano limit, and that's the parameter which is going to control our perturbative investigation. So epsilon is going to be a very, very small parameter. We take the Veneziano limit by sending these n's to infinity, okay, whereby epsilon becomes a continuous parameter, and we can tune it to either sign. Now, the other thing to watch out for is that in the Veneziano limit, r is going to be limited between 1 and 3. And as long as p, this number, is finite, yes, then we have a perfectly controlled Veneziano limit of the theory. So in this Veneziano limit, we therefore will have a controlled perturbative expansion. And what we do find is the following beta functions for the one, the second gauge coupling, and the superpotential. Okay? So you see the one loop term, which is of order epsilon or p times epsilon, so some small number. And then there are the two loop contributions, including the C factors here, the gauge factors, then the mixing terms, and the contribution from the Yukawas. Remember, they normally, as here, come with a minus sign. Okay. Now, there's a corresponding beta function for the Yukawa. I mean, you can imagine those things, but then you simply have to sit down and analyze that system. So what's the interesting domain to look into? So firstly, this quantum field theory has a lot of fixed points. I give you the table up here. But let me focus on the regime of interest for our interests now. Asymptotic freedom means epsilon negative, one loop coefficient negative, and p positive, so that both gauge sectors have a negative one loop coefficient. We are not interested in that. We are interested in a setting where the semi-simple gauge theory is no longer asymptotically free. There are three options for that. Option number one, one gauge sector is no longer asymptotically free, but the other is. Option number two, the converse. Option number three, both gauge sectors are no longer asymptotically free. Now, the last case happens to be uninteresting because as soon as both of them are asymptotically no longer free, the theory is not even having any fixed points other than the Gaussian. So the interesting scenario is a scenario in which one gauge sector is free, but the other is no longer asymptotically free. So this would be these two scenarios here. Let's focus on one of them, and I will show you very explicitly what is going to happen here. So let's thank you. So let's look into beta 1, which is the gauge sector, where in this choice of variables, the gauge sector alpha 1 is no longer asymptotically free. How can we see it? The effective B coefficient, the one loop coefficient, okay, B should be positive for asymptotic freedom, but if epsilon is positive, this leading order term is negative, so asymptotic freedom loss. Now I'm saying this is not the real one loop coefficient, it's an effective one loop coefficient. And what's exactly happening here is that the presence of the other gauge sector develops a kind of gauge Yukawa fixed point. And because of that gauge Yukawa fixed point, the presence of this gauge Yukawa fixed point deflects onto this beta function by generating an additional term which modifies the one loop coefficient. And the very important point here, again, is the sign of this term. Only if the other gauge sector has a gauge Yukawa fixed point, only then the sign is such that an asymptotically non-free one loop coefficient can be turned into an asymptotically free one by changing its sign. So, in a sense, what happens is that the asymptotically free gauge sector makes something which, from its perspective, looks like an infrared gauge Yukawa fixed point, but that fixed point allows the second gauge sector to actually stabilize and become a meaningful quantum field theory, fundamental quantum field theory of its own. Okay? So let's see when this is going to happen. So we have equations, yes? So you see in this parameter space of P and R, yes, the yellow and green shaded areas tell us when this sign change is going to happen. So we know there's a large range Okay, in which now that fixed point has become a stable and meaningful ultraviolet fixed point for both gauge sectors. Now, as a maybe last slide to illustrate that, here I've shown you the phase diagram for this non-abelian gauge series. So you see one gauge factor, the second gauge factor. Alpha 2 obviously asymptotically free because we can run out of the gauge, out of the Gaussian fixed point. Alpha 1 not asymptotically free. It's an infrared fixed point from its point of view. Okay? So the Gaussian clearly is not a UV fixed point of this theory. However, the theory does have an ultraviolet fixed point, which is this one. How would we know it's a UV fixed point? Simple. We can run out of it. We can run towards lower energies. Okay? And there's no way from any to run into this fixed point from any other fixed point. So there's no hierarchically higher UV fixed point than this one, which means that this indeed is the UV fixed point for our model. Now, what comes out that in this particular model, you would run from this UV fixed point to actually another fixed point in the IR. So you run from a superconformal quantum field theory in the UV to the superconformal quantum field theory in the IR. You could switch on soft supersymmetry breaking masses, okay? So you could imagine that you sit in the UV, and now you decide your initial conditions. So you use this fixed point to define your quantum field theory, but you are entitled to choose initial conditions, possibly even for soft supersymmetric breaking masses. Yes. And if those are switched off, then you would run down. But these masses, since at weak coupling, they have a large canonical mass dimension, they will drive you away, and you will not, certainly not reach this conformal infrared fixed point. But you would run to some low energy regime of your theory, where the theory may run into ordinarily strongly coupled SU-N cross SU-M theories. Good. So let me wrap up. This is where we started, full blackout, okay? So I was hoping to put a couple of spotlights onto a couple of things, and so my summary for today is we have achieved a few things. We have now a complete understanding of asymptotic safety at weak coupling in four-dimensional, general four-dimensional quantum field theories. We have worked out explicit examples for simple, semi-simple, and supersymmetric quantum field theories. They show a large variety of fixed points, ultraviolet fixed points, but even infrared fixed points, all sorts of material. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. Certainly, it's opening a window of opportunities for model building, for BSM, for dark matters, which is still the topic of this meeting. Okay. Now, it also opens up important future questions, and maybe one of the interesting topics worth discussing here is what's going to happen at stronger coupling. Okay, so now that we know the dynamics of asymptotic safety at weak coupling, what happens if we go a little bit away and allow couplings to be stronger, okay, where perhaps the perturbative loop expansion is no longer totally reliable, but perhaps still indicative of what's going on, okay? And maybe there are also a few lessons from these structural insights which can be learned for gravity. Thank you very much for your attention.